This is Studio A from Interlochen Public Radio.
The World Youth Symphony Orchestra is off to an amazing start with last weekend's performance of Rachmaninoff's Second Symphony, and the young musicians are right back to work, preparing in earnest for the second concert of the summer YSO season at Interlochen this Sunday, July 6th. A summertime audience will grab a cone at Melody Freeze and head over to the outdoor Kresge Auditorium, where the seats offer a view of the lake shimmering behind the orchestra. Sounds pretty great. The conductor who will take the podium this week is the music director of Orchestre National d'Île-de-France, Kay Scaglione, who joins us now in Studio A. Welcome to the Northern Michigan Woods.
Thank you so much for having me. You know, I'm from Texas, so Michigan reminds me a lot of home without the insufferable heat. So it's nice to be here.
I hear you. So this is your first summer conducting the World Youth Symphony Orchestra. Can you tell us about what drew you here? What, for you, is the appeal of working on such a short time schedule, less than a full week, with young musicians who are at such a formative stage?
Well, this has always been such a joyful process for me, working for younger people. One of the hardest things, I think, when one gets experience in any field is to not learn too much. The wisdom is really in unlearning things. And what's wonderful about working with students like this is that you have this amazing talent and potential with no preconceived ideas. So one really has the chance to start from scratch, even with a great masterpiece that they're playing. For me, Interlochen has kind of a mythical touch to it. I went to undergraduate school at the Cleveland Institute of Music and did summer programs in other places, but everybody had been to Interlochen. So I heard about this beautiful place and never had a chance to be here, and was invited by my friend Christian Macellaro. Yeah, it feels such an honor to be here and get to take part in it. I always wanted to be a student here, so to be here teaching is like a dream come true.
Right. You finally get to come. And you get to wear the uniform, too.
Exactly. I'm glad to, with my lanyard and everything.
That's right. Well, it's exciting for us. Well, you've conducted a long list of professional orchestras. There's a cohesion that happens in an established ensemble. But in contrast, this is just the second week of camp, and this orchestra is just starting to get to know each other. So with that in mind, what were your first impressions walking into the first rehearsal, which you just came from?
There is excitement in the air. Everybody's really thrilled to play this music. It's such a wonderful atmosphere. Martin Chalifour from the Los Angeles Philharmonic is up there helping us through the first rehearsal, and it's just a wonderful open atmosphere, and I get the feeling the students really want to play. You know, you couldn't spend your time any better.
Did you play in a youth orchestra? If you did, what were your best memories of that time?
I was a trombone player in my former life, came up in the Texas band system. Most of my formative years were with wind ensemble, obviously, because the tradition in Texas is band. But I did play in the Houston Youth Symphony for many seasons. And the thing that got me hooked, I'd say, was when we did the first movement of Mahler's Third Symphony. There's a really big trombone solo in this. And I'd practiced and practiced for the audition, and I won first chair, which was really exciting. And I got to play this trombone solo. To be inside of a landscape like that, and particularly the nature of that famous trombone solo where everything, you know, gets really quiet and there's this rumble, I realized that doing it on stage, being in the moment, is something that is absolutely induplicable. It's a really addictive feeling. It solidified for me that that's what I wanted to do with the rest of my life.
So the Dvorak has a little bit of a trombone solo in it.
Yeah, it's one of the things that trombone players are always always keeping on the excerpt list. The big one, the big really kind of fast, crazy one, is at the end of the finale. They have a pretty exciting lick.
Oh, wow. So do you look at the trombone player with knowingly during that point?
I try not to, because I remember conductors looking at me made me nervous, you know? Yeah, you try not to make direct eye contact with the brass players. They've got a lot going on there.
Right. There's a lot to think about for everyone up there. So you've chosen Dvorak's most outdoorsy symphony to play in this outdoor venue. It's not long before you hear the birds in the orchestra.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what excites you the most about sharing Dvorak's Eighth Symphony in particular with these players?
I asked the students, you know, who had played this, and it was probably just a third of the orchestra. So the idea of getting to traverse a masterpiece like Dvorak's Eighth Symphony, where, you know, 60-70% of the orchestra has never played it before, is a wonderful and frankly rare opportunity. There is an accessibility to Dvorak's Eighth Symphony. It means for our public, regardless of the most seasoned classical music connoisseurs to somebody who just wants to come and hear something for the first time, every measure of it is accessible. But there is a profundity to the music that comes from the sincerity of the folk music and this very Dvorak tradition that you feel like you can sing along one measure to the next without ever being camp or needlessly repetitive. And that's a really rare thing. Dvorak somehow does this, achieves this kind of brilliance that appeals to listeners of all back. Mozart had this, you know,
yeah.
Where a musicologist can look at this and even dogs somehow know that Mozart and Dvorak are good. You know, you see them, their ears perk up somehow. I don't know. There's a real talent to that brilliance in plain speaking.
And Dvorak kind of had one foot in America, and the American song tradition, the sorrowful songs and spirituals, and another foot firmly planted in the Czech and Bohemian tradition.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing about that is, in the United States, it's a real chicken and egg situation. A lot of the cowboy songs, you know, playing on these thirds, like the famous Dvorak's Ninth Symphony, the second movement, English horns, this da-dee-dee-dee-da-dum, is obviously a spiritual, but, it, you know, when you're tracing the origins of these things, it's messy, you know, when you're dealing with people, and some things are stolen, some things are kind of bleed into other traditions inadvertently. And there's a real circle of this Czech music being American folk music, being Czech music, and back and forth. But obviously all of our culture, since we're all transplants here, is borrowed from somewhere else. That's why my wife, who's English and who's a non-musician, she says, I always have this feeling of like cowboy music hearing the melodies of Dvorak symphonies. And that's why. It's exactly where, largely Central Europe, where a lot of these folk songs came from.
And performing it at Interlaken with the World Youth Symphony Orchestra, named that because these players come from all corners of the country for sure, but also all over the world to join, and their common language is this music. And so it gets even messier in a way to try to delineate what comes from what or where.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it sounds a little bit cliche, but it is all just one thing. You know, these delineations between, you know, culture and background and whatever else sort of fall away. And somehow we find ourselves here at Interlaken, playing off the same stand of music and using the same bow amount and looking at the same note, and what comes out is, I think it's what really makes music such a special and unique thing.
So beautiful. It's what keeps us coming back.
Absolutely.
What should first-time listeners listen for in the symphony?
First-time listeners should not listen for anything. They should just hear. Really let this thing wash over you and take the emotional ride. I mean, it really scales these ranges of emotion from love and passion to the melancholy of the beginning. And I would say just to sit back and to enjoy it and let it wash over and take you wherever it goes. I feel like, particularly for me, whenever I'm listening to something for the first time, if I try to tune into something too much, one runs the risk of missing something.
I think it's interesting that this is such a bucolic symphony. It's considered almost a pastoral symphony. And Dvorak loved the outdoors. He would go on these long walks. He would draw from the natural landscape when he's composing. He wrote a piece called In Nature's Realm. But he suffered from agoraphobia. He was often fearful about going outside. In fact, he missed the premiere of his Symphony No. 9 because of that condition. So it's this play between being drawn into and also repelled by the outdoors at the same time.
Yeah, there's something about that nature thing, that it is the original place, that place where all the natural sounds happen, that silence. I think it's us trying to get back to what our natural sense of the world is. And the great ones can do that.
Well, so it's known for its bucolic feel, but also for its strong flavor of Bohemian folk culture. Where in the symphony can we especially hear the Dvorak Czech roots?
Oh, I mean, it's everywhere, but particularly the third movement, this waltzy kind of N3 thing. It's funny because this music is so Central European. It's not far from Germany and all the things we're used to hearing, you know, Italian, German, French music, but somehow it feels a million miles away, and it really gives away these bohemian Czech roots in the third and fourth movements, particularly this, you know, in the last movement, this bum dum dim dim dum bum 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 dim. The clothing is familiar. It sounds German romantic, but it's absolutely not. It is its own thing.
So also on the program is Jeff Scott's Countdown, 10 Minutes to Live. It had a really interesting genesis. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah. He saw something in the news that basically gave him this idea of what if one was given a fixed amount of time to live. I mean, we suspect that we're all going to die at some point. We hope not, that we might be the exception to that. but what happens when it becomes a very fixed point in time, not far from now? And this music really traverses the range of emotions that would happen, the kind of searching, thinking about one's own mortality. And the result is a brilliantly colorful romp of a piece.
And in this particular case, you only have 10 minutes.
That's right.
10 minutes to live. That's a lot to pack in. There's a quote from the composer that said, when you try to throw that much emotion into something that short, it ends up being sort of a cauldron.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, if you can imagine an entire symphony pushed into a trash compactor, that's basically the idea.
And maybe not too unlike, metaphorically, this experience of these young musicians compacted into these intense weeks of preparation and musicianship and connection.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a lot of emotion that goes on with that, too.
There is a lot of emotion. And what I found for me, some of these experiences in my formative years of getting to play a symphony like this one for the first time, is that these revelations unfold themselves slowly afterwards. Sometimes it takes 6 months, a year, for these experiences to fully materialize in your nervous system. There are things that I look back on fondly and still draw wisdom from 30 years later.
Many Interlaken campers and academy students do go on to professional careers. They are dreaming of it. You know, a lot of them in the group are. What advice will you share with these Interlaken students during this process to help bridge that gap between student and professional artistry?
Well, the way to bridge that gap is to not view it as a gap. Something that I've always tried to do, and I say this openly to my orchestras, even in the professional world, is to remain a perpetual student. And that is to benefit from the experience that you have, but never to allow any rigidity in that this is how it has to be. And a good idea can come from anywhere. And when we stay open to this and we have what I say is strong ideas but loosely held, and just to remain a student always, and I do to this day, to remain in this beginner's mindset. There's a great quote about the great poet T.S. Eliot. Somebody asked him about his meaning in his poetry. And he said, the meaning of the poetry or the meaning of a work of art or a symphony orchestra is nothing more than the cheap meat that you feed to the dog while you rifle through the jewelry. That the real work sort of happens underneath the surface and organically. And it's a beautiful process.
Well, we'll be able to hear and see that process in real time on Sunday. Case Scaglione will conduct the World Youth Symphony Orchestra in concert Sunday, July 6th at 7:30 p.m. in Kresge Auditorium on the Interlaken campus. It's an exciting program with Dvorak's Pastoral, Eighth Symphony, and Jeff Scott's Countdown, 10 Minutes to Live. Classical IPR will broadcast that performance live. The webcast will be streamed as well at interlaken.org/webcasts. Kay Scaglione, thank you so much for your time today. I really look forward to the concert.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to it as well.
Studio A is a production of Interlaken Public Radio, part of Interlaken Center for the Arts. Learn more at interlakenpublicradio.org.